All right, welcome back, everybody. We're going to talk about the penultimate episode. Oh man, that sounded like I choked up. It's just my allergies. The penultimate episode of Leverage. I've got Tara Kennedy back with me.
Yay, hello, everybody.
Hello. And yeah, we're going to be talking about The Toy Job, which was written by Joe Hortua and directed by our good friend Jonathan Frakes. It aired, fittingly, December 18th, 2012, and it is a Christmas-themed episode, though I'm not convinced they filmed it at Christmas time, to be honest. A lot of the outdoor shots, I'm like, I've never been to Portland in December, but I think it might be a little more chilly than it looks in these shots. That's okay. That is okay. So in this episode, the team goes after a CEO who's selling dangerous toys to the public. And they're going to save Christmas again for like the third time.
Well, I mean, technically they're going to steal Christmas to save it, but yes.
I think St. Nicholas would be proud. Again, the patron saint of thieves, so... It works. The opening scene is totally, they're trying to trick you into thinking it's Hardison who's doing a bad job of hacking into a computer. Because we see just someone's hands failing to hack into a computer. And then they instead open up a safe and take a briefcase out of it and disappear before a security guard can come find them. But we see who it is, and it's not our patient. We were just talking about ER.
our client.
Our client, whose name is Eldon, and he's like hiding. And he shows up at the brew pub, which is all decorated for Christmas, so that's how we know it's Christmas time. And he's talking with Nate and Sophie, and he pulls out the briefcase. And he tells them that the product that's inside this briefcase is the result of years of research and development. And everyone at the company is convinced that this is going to make their stock soar. It's going to be like the next big thing. And Nate's like, a toy? And he's like, yes, it's called Chubby Snubby. And he pulls it out and it's like a stuffed dog.
It is a stuffed dog. Well, and interestingly enough, they never, like, Chubby Snubby gets referenced again throughout the episode, but like they never talk about what it does. I mean, it may literally do nothing but be cute, but that seems unusual for them to expect a stuffed toy that doesn't do anything else to really be the toy of the season.
Right. We learn a lot about the marketing of toys in this episode, but it's not in a box. There's no like branding. So you don't get an idea of like, why is Chubby Snubby important to anybody? And I don't even think Chubby Snubby is that well-made looking.
But it's, did feel like that was intentional so that like the reveal was sort of like, that's it. Like, it's not even that cute.
Yeah. Cause it's one of those like metal briefcases and he like opens it up and he pulls out this like beige and brown dog. And, Sophie's like, well, he is cute. So the issue is that this toy, though really cute and probably will make them a lot of money, is not actually safe. This guy was the executive who was overseeing the safety report for it, and it came back with a level 3 choking hazard. So, and he didn't want to cook the books, so his boss, Hazlitt, fired him. And Sophie's like, oh, this is kind of a cute toy. And he's like, yeah, it's cute until your kid swallows the nose and it swells up to the size of a pomegranate. For a second, I thought he meant the kid was going to swell up, but then I realized he meant the nose, and that's very upsetting. Something the size of a pomegranate in a child's throat. Like, oh, no. And we learn that Trent Hazlett, who's the CEO of Poggio Toys, I have forgotten how they said it now.
I have already forgotten how they said it too. I feel like it's Poggio, but I couldn't swear to
that. Like it looks Italian. Poggio. Yeah. But he, you know, he does cost benefit analysis of everything. So the death of a few kids is an acceptable risk to him, which is pretty awful. So Eldon just wants to make sure that this thing does not hit the market. And then we immediately switch to headquarters, and Hardison is showing us background on Trent Hazlett, who, before he became the head of a toy company, he, you know, used to be a defense contractor, which totally, that just, you know, obvious. Lateral movement right there.
Right, like super obvious career pivot.
Yeah, selling RPGs and anti-aircraft weaponry to Latin American dictators and the rebels who oppose them to selling stuffed animals to children. It's like things like this on Leverage, when it's so upsetting, you're like, I know that has to be real. And I know it's probably even more upsetting in real life. And they toned it down for the show.
Yeah. Well, so part of the reason I wanted to do this episode is I actually, way back when, worked for a very tiny toy company that no longer exists. It was very tiny. There were like four of us. But obviously we were not, you know, spoiler, like bidding on premium shelf space at Joylandia. Oh, thank you. Oh, goodness. I've forgotten like all the names of everything despite having watched this episode multiple times.
We were talking about this earlier.
A lot of the things about, like, the one thing I will say, and this is just true of TV in general, right, is that, the big toy expo is actually held in February because, like, so many of these decisions just, you know, like, because of manufacturing lead times and all of that, like, all of these decisions get made well before December.
Yes!
So they collapsed the timeline, but yeah, I mean, I think the rest of it is very true. And plus, like, the toys is sort of make it exaggerated, but like, there's so much of marketing and advertising, you know, I mean, I think it felt real at the time that it aired, but I think now, as we're just far more aware of the way that people market things to us, that this sort of unpacking of the way that choices are pushed at you is just, it is frighteningly real.
Yeah. But you're right. I think we are more aware, not that it doesn't work as well now, but like we're much more aware of like influencers. Like that's something that a word that gets thrown around a lot more, that they don't even say that word in this episode, but it is very much, you know, when they talk about the mommy bloggers and the power that they have. Yeah. They're like getting there. Because, yeah, in 2012, we weren't really saying influencers out loud. So I like this first scene here because they're not even all together. They've already started this job. And they, maybe they are all together right here. But they, like, immediately go into the first heist where Parker is breaking in to the toy company to get, the safety report. And she's just like walking through it. Like she's like, oh yeah, I can break into that safe really easy. You just need a camera and blah, blah, blah. And
yeah, it was sort of surprising because Parker's like, oh yeah, you just drill into it. And you're like, what? Not even any finesse? We're just going to break into the safe? Okay.
But man, this episode's going to be over like in 2 seconds.
Right. We'll just be done.
Yeah. And it's so easy that we use this time where she's breaking into the safe to have a discussion about Christmas presents and how they're not going to give each other Christmas presents this year because Nate thinks they went overboard the year before. And Parker disagrees because she loves her motorcycle that she got because Hardison bought her $100,000 motorcycle for Christmas.
Well, and he tries to be all clever, like, don't hate the game, hate the elf to Elliot, who is so upset that he went outside the bounds of Secret Santa in this fashion. And Elliot's like, I do hate the elf.
In fact, yeah.
But yes, I had not thought about that until this discussion, how difficult it would be when you had already made more money than one could expect to see in your life to figure out how to navigate Secret Santa. I mean, just super coincidental, although obviously not at all coincidental, that Hardison got Parker for Secret Santa last year.
I think that, I mean, the year before they showed the like presents that Sophie and Nate got for everybody and how they were really thoughtful and they were perfect. But I think that Alec Hardison would be the best present giver. Like, I think he would know exactly what every person wants. You know, like a motorcycle or whatever, but like, I think he would be really good at that. So he'd be the best.
I don't know that he would be as good as shopping for Elliot as he would be for Parker.
Not as good, but I think he'd still.
I mean, I think he would aim high.
Yeah.
But yeah, I also think Elliot's like super hard. I think what you do is you buy Elliot gifts fit for a foodie, right? Like that's how you get Elliot the good knives.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think that whatever present he would get him would still get a damn it Hardison. But like maybe it's like a little tear, like damn it Hardison. How did you know that I needed these knives? but yeah, Nate wants to set a hard limit on how much they're spending, and you know, Sophie's like $1,000, and he's like, no. She's like $50. Like that's lower than my family's Secret Santa. That's pretty difficult.
Yeah,
Parker has this information in this time.
It's possible. I mean, we'll get into this as it comes up later. But I was trying to figure out how much of this was Nate wanting to curb their spending or to curb his own spending requirements, or how much of this is Nate is not really feeling the Christmas spirit this year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always hard to tell. Like, he's like, I just don't want to be bothered with finding presents for everybody, or I don't want presents myself, or I might need to save my money because I might not be pulling, you know, outrageous heists for much longer. Could be a lot of things. But they get the files that they were looking for. It's the safety reports. And sure enough, Hazlitt has doctored the data. He's gotten the American Safety Association of Pediatricians, to give it 5 stars. And it turns out that this association are just retired doctors out of Guam who have no standing in the pediatrics world. And Elliot's like, shouldn't there be like somebody else regulating stuff, like the government or something? And Eldon says, yeah, there's this Consumer Product Safety Commission, which isn't actually like a good government organization, and they really try, but they can only test things that companies bring them to test, and nobody wants to put their product at that risk of not passing. So it's much easier to just pay off some doctors in Guam. And Eldon's like, well, I appreciate you for trying. And they're like, whoa, 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 we're not done yet. No, we're just starting. Don't worry about this. And they're gonna make sure this stops, isn't released. But he tells them that they don't know what they're up against. This guy's a corporate hitman. Like, we're not worried.
Although Elliot's a little worried, because after, you know, Nate's reassured him and sends him away, Elliot's like, so we actually have nothing. So why are you promising him we'll fix it?
He's like, because we're gonna fix it. We're gonna steal Christmas. Let's go. This is not getting released. Because if there's any way to get Nate Ford to get in the Christmas spirit, it's like how we're gonna save some kids. Children are at risk. Let's go.
Yeah, it is an interesting convergence of like the thing that guaranteed to get Nate involved and the thing, because Parker's soft, gooey center for Christmas, while conflicted about stealing Christmas, is still, she wants everyone to have the very best Christmas ever. So,
yeah.
She's only concerned about the methodology, not the motivations.
Mm. Yeah. Then we get this, we haven't in a while had arguments about what kind of cons to use. And it's always wonderful. And Sophie says the Trojan horse won't work. And you're like, well, what's that? What's the Trojan horse? I want to know. Is it like literally just like the Trojan horse or what? So, and she says, we'd have to sell Hazlitt, a toy company so filled with financial liability that it bankrupts him before the launch of Chevy's Nubby. So that's going to be a little hard to do. But Nate's like, but exactly though, like we just bait him with a new hit toy and he'll want to take that instead. So Hardison is finding them a failed toy that already exists so they don't have to start from scratch. And he tells them, about this third-party toy distributor that sells failed toys in Bolivia and the Sudan in bulk. And they also sell those Super Bowl loser t-shirts for like whoever didn't win the big game. And so they're like pulling up these actual toys. And they said in the commentary that it was really hard to come up with a fake toy because all of these horrible things had already existed, and they were just like, so there are versions of like TSA security screener toy and the Whirly Gleegly, and this homeless mother and daughter doll set was a thing, which is just wild. And Hardison's favorite is one called Sir Boat-a-Lot, which just is like a ship's captain. When you pull his arm, he gives you a sailing tip. But Nate decides that the Whirly Gleegly is what they're going to get. It's supposed to do figure eights, but it barely does a one. And it sold 1,100 units. And Hardison's like, I actually think I had this as a kid. It's a shitty toy. So Nate thinks it's bland enough that it's going to slip through the cracks, but quirky enough that they can, you know,
build a story about it.
Thank you. So they just, Sophie's like, all right, we just have to get the kids to go crazy for this toy that's actually just junk. And Nate points out that a toy craze is a lot like a con. You just got to convince them that they want something that they didn't know that they wanted. And so they've got to intercept this shipment before it gets to Africa, or before it leaves for Africa in 39 hours. And so, of course, they send Parker in. Parker gets to do a lot of her fun stuff. This is very much a Christmas present to her. She gets to rappel in, and she finds the box for the Whirly Gleeglies, which, what a name. But right next to it, she's like, has her flashlight, and she's looking back and forth, and she sees another toy called Baby Joy Rage. And she like looks at it. She's like looking back and forth, looking back and forth, looking back and forth. And then she like smiles, and you're like, oh no. Oh no, what have you done, Parker? And what she's done is she's taken the other toy, Baby Joy Rage, which is a terrifying doll, even on the like normal side of its head, because it has two sides of its head. And when you shake it or press in on it, the head rotates and then it's angry. And it's not just angry, it has like like a scar on one eye. And it looks like a Chucky doll or something. And Hardison is horrified by this doll. And he's like, who the hell would give this thing to a child? And Parker is kind of offended. She's like, wait, it's not a thing.
Parker's like, everybody loves dolls. Come on. This is the best idea ever.
This is good. And he says, that's not a doll. It's some old voodoo witchcraft, and I don't want it up in Lucille. And she makes fun of his shoes, one of those flashy kicks. what if I said that about the flashy kicks that you've been giving me lately? And he's like, you know what? Or he's like, those are awesome. They're shiny and they make you fast. But he doesn't think that a kid should ever be subjected to this. And I mean, fair, it's really scary. But I like that at the from the get-go here, Parker is like offended and feels very protective of this terrifying toy. And you're like, oh, I know something is a little different there. And Nate doesn't even care. He's just like, it doesn't matter what Parker picked. We're going to have to find a way to con people into thinking this can be sold. And you know, Elliot and Sophie they disagree. They're like, we just have to create this wildfire buzz. It's like the modern art world or the movie industry. So, yeah, just you can make billions as long as you've got the right buzz. And now what they've got to do is get it on Hazlitt's radar. All right. Okay, now we finally meet Hazlitt, who is played by the guy that's in everything.
Logan Hinsberger's dad.
Yes, that's what he was. I was like, man, he's in everything. Who is that?
I know. I was looking through his IMDb because I was like, I know I've seen him in stuff, and he's usually evil. So,
yes, Greg with three G's, G-R-E-G-G. Hazlitt, or Greg Henry, sorry, is the actor. What else has he been in too? But that is the big one. Grandpa. Oh my gosh. Yes, and he's Star-Lord. Or its grandfather at the beginning of Guardians of the Galaxy. Grandpa Quill. Yeah. The older Hinsberger. Hazlitt, we see him come in with his assistant, who again, in the commentary, they're like, the motivation of the assistant works really well if you imagine that they're in love with the bad guy. And his little assistant's name is Pantani. That's his last name. And he's just like, spouting some gibberish, and the assistant's like, what? And because he says, JIC says the kids will clock the mutt at 88.6% satisfied. And the JIC is apparently the Jubilation Index Calculator, which is a new app that he has created that will register a toy's gross market and franchise potential vis-a-vis hand size, age, ethnicity, and other things. And he's like, this is going to be better than this other doll that he calls a tramp. And you're like, wow, this guy. But apparently, like, hand size is something that is very much taken into consideration when designing a toy. Is definitely not something you think about, but if you do think about it, you're like, oh, well, yeah, you want it to be the right size for little hands to play with and manipulate in a comfortable way. We see this is all also, like, as the Hazlitt comes in, this is all one continuous shot. So, and it just, like, moves through with no cuts. They walk through. We see Nate and Hardison following them. And then...
Nate and Hardison are following them.
And they're actually, we didn't even say where they're at. They're at Joylandia, or they're at this, like, convention.
The Toy Expo.
Toy Expo. And which, you're right, like, you're not going to have this in December right before Christmas, because the toy companies right before Christmas are trying to sell all their toys already. They're not getting things ready to be rolled out. But, you know, that wouldn't be as high stakes.
So, yeah, I think it's just one of those things that they do in TV. They collapse the time frame because nobody really wants to watch a show about Christmas toys set in February.
No. Yeah. The urgency, the sense of urgency would not be there. So they're following him around kind of this convention center. And we find out that they want to get on this retail giant, Joylandia. They want to get their premium shelf space. And there's like a bidding war for this every year to get the best space. And those contracts get re-upped at these expos. So now Sophie's out on the floor. She's ready to get in there. And the shot continues. Like, we see the whole expo floor with, like, people in costumes and toy company employees and toys everywhere. And Sophie is handing her card to a guy talking, you know, all sorts of jargon. And telling him that she's like, I want all of this, like, great shelf space stuff because this toy that I have is going to be massive. And he's not quite sure, but she says, like, believe me, I have a huge success rate. And she goes to walk away and she bumps into Hazlitt and says, oh, you know, pardon me. And she keeps walking and he, like, looks after her and... because, and they said in the commentary, they're like, oh, it's Jonathan Frakes, so he's gonna show the legs. And yeah, they're like, the guys are, like, sleazy and look her up and down as she walks away. And he immediately asks this other guy whose name is Gil who that was, and he's luckily got her card right there so he can say that she's Mimi Ronder, a new toy rep. And Hazlitt is already, like, intrigued. And he asks, like, oh, is she trying to get some good shelf space from Joylandia? But Gil's like, oh, you don't have a thing to worry about. Don't worry. You always come up with the highest bid anyways, old boy. And it has, like, completely, like, the cameras have, like, swirled around sort of, and we see Hardison and Nate still watching. And, you know, Hardison's like, well, he's just going to outbid us for the shelf space. And Nate's like, that's cool. We just wanted to get on his radar. And now we've got to do the hard part. We got to make the kids of America want this toy that they never should have wanted. And so they are going to start a viral toy craze at the Portland Farmers Market, because Hardison has run algorithms on all the Portland zip codes to find out the most likely nexus for a social buzz epidemic, which is wild. But I mean, you think of, like, yeah, there are, like, influencers, but, like, having, like, families who are influential in who could start a fad is also interesting. And so all of these people, all of these families that he's highlighted are different, but they all have one thing in common, and it's this farmer's market that they all go to. So they start out at this farmer's market, and they're not selling it there. They're just going to start giving this toy away at the farmer's market. So Elliot is just standing there trying to talk about this baby toy Joy Rage, this little girl who's by herself talking to the strange man. And
yeah, I thought about that, like, because he's, I mean, and it, Hardison makes a comment that they're using like the drug dealer methodology. And so clearly Elliot has been dressed to lean into that image, because he's wearing like, you know, an open denim shirt over a button down shirt. And he's got
his beanie on.
And it's one of those things that like there would be a way to have done that that made him look like a crunchy farmer's market person. But they have clearly... like, yeah, I thought about that too, that someone should be worried about this small girl talking to this strange man
at an
unmarked booth.
Yeah, it's very weird. As someone who works with the farmer's market, I don't know. If there's some strange man trying to give out toys, we'd be like, get out of here, we're calling the cops. But yeah, he gives her, she just kind of like looks at him when he asks her if she thinks it's cool, but then he's like, here, it's free, you can have it, tell your friends. And then they get mobbed with a bunch of kids coming over. And Hardison is kind of disgusted that they're doing this drug dealer approach. And then Nate explains what the drug dealer approach is. Like, we know the first taste is free and then after that costs, but it keeps them coming back. So now
it doesn't actually seem like a very good marketing strategy for toys, because you only have to buy one baby Joy Rage, right?
Yeah. But like, I guess I get that, like, you know, you see your friend with one and now you want one too.
Well, no, that's true. Yeah. But as far as getting other kids to want one too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the next step is putting it in the hands of a tastemaker. So someone who's got a lot of popularity, who if kids see them with it, they're gonna want it too. And I love this whole scene. It's a girl named a young kind of Disney style actress named Sandy Mateo. She's coming out of her trailer, and she's just like yelling at someone on the phone about market shares and stuff. 3 points on the gross. And she like has a big tote purse, like fancy tote, and she's like looking through for something, and Sophie walks up and she's like, oh, these bags are so hard to find things in. And when she gets distracted by somebody else, Sophie drops baby Joy Rage into her purse. And then as they're leaving, she's like, aren't you Sandy Mateo? And she like turns, like does the like cheesy smile, like, ah. And Hardison is hiding, taking creepy pictures of a teenage girl as a paparazzi kind of. And you can see the terrifying rage face of this toy peeking out of her bag. So they I guess sell those to the paps for that.
Well, I think so looks like. Hardison plants it on a bunch of influential blogs. He basically personally makes it go viral.
I mean, sometimes you have to do it yourself. But it works, because Hazlitt sees it and he gets a little upset. Oh yeah, he does say, I forgot about this, I'm currently embedding it on 23 different sites. If there's a kid who does not know what this toy is by next week, they're probably being homeschooled somewhere under a rock. It's good. But to further this viral thing, Sophie has brought out her theater troupe and has them calling stores asking for this. And we get to see our good friend Zachary, who's been a recurring character, and he gets coached by Sophie because he's not doing a great job, and she gives him some more motivation. And he tells her, like, when I win my Oscar, I'm going to name it after you. And she's like, yeah, okay, whatever. Just call. And then he does get really good. Yeah, I just love her. You know, you want the toy so that your child will sit still and give you some peace and quiet so you can finally open that delicious bottle of Merlot that you've been dreaming about since 10 a.m. That's some good motivation.
Yes, trust Sophie to develop a whole backstory so that you right? can make a phone call asking for a toy.
Right. But Hazlitt has seen the Sandy Mateo stuff because apparently she also has an exclusive deal with them for the miniskirt dancer hoop. What could that be? I just like the weird word. They're like, just it's a word salad. It's a toy. Yeah, and he says they're also getting calls to customer service asking if they own Baby Joy Rage and when it's going to come out. So he pulls up another page and he sees that Sophie is the toy rep for Baby Joy Rage. And he's like, oh, this is the lady that I saw. She's a naughty, naughty girl. And he's very much attracted to this. He likes this, that she's cutthroat like this. And he says he wants a sit down with Gil from Joylandia as soon as possible. And he wants info about this doll, like the media saturation numbers for this doll. We know because of Hardison telling us that the media saturation numbers for Baby Joy Rage is at 62% right now, which seems pretty good for a toy that was supposed to just be shipped off for bulk.
I mean, the part that they never get to is that somebody somewhere who created Baby Joy Rage is like, what has happened?
Right?
Like, they're watching all this news. Like, that's my joy.
I'm not seeing a dime of this. But Sophie says it's not enough. They need it to be at least 89%. And, you know, Elliot's like, you know, this doll is a bust. And Parker is like, the really stupid thing would have done worse. And, you know, they start kind of bickering, but Nate stops them. And he's, you know, Elliot's like, well, why, you know, why do you think, what makes you an expert on this? And she's like, because I was there, it spoke to me. And she says, it reminded me of a toy my social worker used to make me do exercises with. And this is when we get into like, we're like cracking this wide open. We're going to get a flashback in a second. But first, Elliot's like, he's kind of gruff and mean with her about it. He's like, are you kidding me? And Sophie's like, what? Like, you always do like what you're supposed to do. Like, don't act like you don't go rogue every so often. And Nate's still, he's hit on the important thing that Parker just said. And he's like, well, what kind of exercises did you do with this doll? And, you know, Parker's like identifying emotions or something. And this is when we get the flashback of like tween aged Parker looking at pictures and dolls. And she's supposed to be telling the therapist what emotions they're all emoting. And every one of them, she says, anger. And she's like, what about these people having fun at the beach? Like, oh, definitely anger. and so then you totally get this, oh, I see why you thought this doll would do well, because this scene that we see the flashback of, it wasn't helping yet, but it might have helped you, and you have like positive connotations that go with a doll sort of like this. And Nate, you know, has a little flush light bulb moment. He's like, okay, you know what, we can't con a six-year-old because they're gonna like what they like, but we can con their parents, because and they talk about it in a little bit, they're like, what are parents the most afraid of? And Parker's like, clowns. Most afraid of clowns. And he says no, evil clowns, no, crazy clowns called Gigi who whisper your name from under your bed. And Sophie's face there when she says that, she's like, oh God, what? But I don't know, parents are most afraid that their kids are not going to be successful and that they're not going to be able to compete with other kids and they're going to be left behind. So Sophie's like, okay, so we pitch the doll as a developmental tool and the child uses it to access their emotions and become more socially aware. So that's where they go. They go from here. But Nate's like, we need a new name for this toy. And Parker's like, not Crazy Gigi. And I'm like, no, no, no. And Sophie like gets up. She's like, baby feels a lot. And he's like, wait, what? And she gets up and she's leaving and she just drops all of this like gold. Baby feels a lot. I feel a lot. You feel a lot. We all feel a lot. And it's okay to feel a lot as long as you use your words, right? Which is both excellent for this thing and maybe a little dig at Nate.
Yes, it's okay to feel a lot. It does seem like perhaps it is a mention to the people in the room who may not always express their feelings very well.
Yeah. And he's just so impressed. He's like, Sophie Devereaux, there she goes. And here's where you were saying earlier, Parker kind of expresses like worry that they're doing this, messing with Christmas presents and like messing with parents' fears. And don't you feel a little guilty? And she says, oh, she says she does feel guilty. And Nate, like, he's like, why? She says, because. And he asks, why is it that people give each other Christmas presents? And she says, to be nice. And then he goes into like a whole thing about, because they're being programmed by these giant corporations that do all the research to figure out how to push these psychological buttons and people to make them get these presents, right? And so he's like, that's what we're doing. We're just manipulating the fears and making these toys. This is Christmas. And I'm like, oh, God. Ugh.
Yeah, I don't think Parker was really the right audience for the Christmas is a giant scam message.
No, no. It's like the one time a year she's happy about the world. It's not. Don't burst your bubble, man. Okay, sorry. I really love this next scene because Elliot is filming Hardison giving a TED talk. He's dressed like Steve Jobs. But he's talking about like children's like emotional health and things like this and identifying feelings and being able to articulate them and things like that. And he ends on like this wonderful quote that as adults, we know that fun is the work of childhood and toys are the tools that we use to accomplish that work. And Elliot's like, dude, how do you come up with this crap? And Hardison's like, I studied early childhood development. What, like it's hard?
Right, obviously. I mean, we all know Hardison believes in doing the work.
Truly, truly. So now he's done this and he's going to make it seem like he's talking to hundreds when he edits it. And then he's going to upload it to the Blogger Mom sites and they're good to go. And Elliot is not on board with this Blogger Mom stuff. But that's really before we realize that he's going to be the Blogger Mom in question that they're going to be using. Or he's actually going to be a Blogger Dad, obviously. But he wants to be the tough dad. And he's got this all like mapped out in his mind, like what kind of dad he would be.
Yeah, he was very specific that he wanted to be the dad that was like willing to talk about feelings, but also roll in the dirt and throw around a ball.
Yeah, like don't go too far.
And still cool.
Yeah, which I mentioned in the last episode when in the commentary they were talking about, oh, Elliot's so manly, he can wear a pink shirt. I was like, God, toxic masculinity is a horrible thing. And like, here it is again, kind of rearing its head. Yeah, like I'll talk about feelings, but I still want to get dirty. So one, just so you know, I'm still manly. Chill out. It's okay.
But I do think part of that is also because he knows that given free rein, Hardison,
that's true.
Hardison will create a dad blog for him that is all heart.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. And he usually has like something to say about the personas that Hardison makes up for him. He does want to have a little say. But then there's the fade to him talking about or talking to the moms at the park. And I guess this is like a mommy blog meetup. But he doesn't have a kid, so there's like no kid around and nobody ever asks where your child is. But Dashiell. And, you know, he's talking about losing his wife and how, you know, it was really hard on him and his son and until they found this doll and it helped them open up about things. And he, you know, he's like, at first I was like, oh, my son playing with a doll, but it actually worked. And now we're talking again. And he felt like he had a duty to get this info out there to let other dads know how this product helped them. So we started his blog. And Allie, who's the big blogger that they were talking about before, her name's Chardonnay Mom. You know, she comes forward and she's like, you know, we all know what it's like to be alone. And she like very pointedly drops that she's divorced. When I got divorced, I'm single, by the way. I was utterly gutted. And, you know, going through those stages of grief is why she started blogging. And she tells him, like, that you have my support and the support of every blogger mom on this in the state. This woman is powerful. And they, like, clap for him and she hugs him. So, that's going. We're gonna go a little viral with this new angle. But my question is, they changed the name of the doll. Isn't that gonna affect how they market it? Like, are there now two dolls like that people are asking about? Is that an issue?
Yeah, I mean, in real life, yes, all of that would be an issue, especially since they built up speed for one thing, and especially since it's like December 18th already.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I do think at this point they're building the buzz over and over again. So
yeah, because Hazlitt was asking about Joy Rage doll. And now it's whatever. Baby feels a lot. I don't know. It's weird. So Soapy is sitting at the expo again and Hazlitt approaches her and, you know, he's impressed by the way that she's flipped this. Like, obviously Baby Joy Radio wasn't working, so rebranding as like, you know, using the smart baby card. And he's like, well, that would be cool if this was 2004 because smart babies are so 8 years ago. And she's like, well-adjusted children are so today. And then she like cites a fake news report that in Dallas, a firefighter used Baby Feels a Lot to coax a runaway child down from a radio tower. Do your toys save lives, Mr. Hazlitt?
I mean, again, Hardison has been hard at work planting these stories about this doll. And maybe that's how they're handling the name change, right? Like, maybe that news story says the toy formerly known as Baby Joy.
Maybe. I trust, you know what? You're right. I trust Hardison to have, like, covered all of this, all these tracks. And yeah, like, oh, now that we're seeing how important this doll is, Baby Joy Rage is not. encompass everything that this doll is. Okay, I like it. Talked myself into it. And as they're talking, Gil shows up and he's like, all right, Trent, let's talk shelves. But Sophie interrupts and is like, oh, I'm so sorry. Can I just, you know, take you for just a minute? Because I have another meeting right after this at 3:15. And just like swoops in before Hazlitt, which both like gets his goat and also like turns him on a little bit. He's like, yeah, okay, sure, ladies first. And then we go back to Leverage headquarters and we see the blog that Hardison has made for Elliot. And he's got this like cheesy grin and he's like, thumbs up. And he's not happy about it, but like Hardison says he's written 3 months worth of blogs for a sensitive dad. I've got prices for the braces, Dashiell's chess club, and Elliot's like pissed that they went to the Super Bowl together, apparently. And
well, I think it ties into Elliot's concern that Hardison always goes one step too far. Like, yeah. You know, he said I wanted to play ball with my fake kid in the backyard, not that I took him to the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is too much.
Yeah, he's like, what if I just took him to a tour of all the ballparks in America? Maybe him took him to the opera, the moon. He's like, a little sarcasm, like believable father-son stuff. And Nate's just trying to get him to focus, and Elliot's angry at the picture that he posed for. That was used. And then, like, I think this is also kind of a vulnerable moment or a telling moment like we had with Parker earlier. But it's covered in, like, partisan bravado. He's like, I'm sorry, this kind of variety opens me up creatively. I'm stuck looking at codes all day. Maybe I was writing the father that I wanted to be one day. Or that I wanted one day. The father that I wanted. Because we know he's a foster kid. But he's like, what's the problem with getting emotionally butt naked? I'm like, I love you so much.
I mean, isn't that what Baby Feels a Lot is supposed to be teaching us? That getting emotionally butt naked is okay.
It's okay. Nate's like, please don't get emotionally or otherwise butt naked. We don't want to see that. And he's like, I'm trying to share my feelings. And Nate's like, please don't. And he's like, but listen, I'm happy with your creativity, but I want to know, like, what do you have on the blogger moms about Elliot? And he's like, oh, what do they say? What are they saying about the sensitive dad? They love him. This week I was introduced to an amazing new toy called Baby Feels a Lot. Thanks to a gentleman who couldn't be more kind, more handsome, or more sensitive. And Elliot's like, ooh. So now he likes it. And Hardison's like, you don't deserve any of that. but now the saturation indexes are ticking up because Hardison did a good job. And back to Sophie, who is schmoozing Gil, and he's invited her to the next retreat in Tahoe. And he gets interrupted to like sign a memo or something. And she's like, okay, well, I'm going to head out. And Hazlitt comes up and he's like pissed that they got so cozy and that she's going to bid on this premium shelf space before Chubby Snubby. And Gil bristles a little. He's like, I don't think I like your tone, Trent. And I'll call you later. And he says, you have my number. And he like holds this file folder up and walks off. And before he gets to Sophie to show her what's in this folder, he like bumps into a dinosaur, like somebody dressed in a dinosaur costume who like is like, oh, you're grumpy, which is the voice of John Rogers. Not actually John Rogers in the costume, which would be great, but his voice. And he walks up to Sophie and she asks him if he's worried. And he drops this story about in 1989 when he was being held hostage by 25 macheted Contras who wanted to gut him navel to chest in the Honduran rainforest. He's like, then I was worried. This is nothing. And he tells her about a saying they told him, plata o pluma. Oh, plata o plomo, which is silver or lead. So, like, take the bribe, the silver, or you get the bullet, the lead. He says, these are going to be Gil's options. Like, he can take the $80,000 for the bid, or he can look inside this envelope or this folder. And she shows him, and it's pictures, apparently, from a trip to Cabo that his wife would not want to see. So he's got, that's the lead. So yeah, he says, you know, without your, so you're not going to get this shelf space, and without it, your toy is going to flop and you're, you know, poof, bye, you're gone. So back at headquarters, you know, Sophie lets them in, Hazlitt's blackmailing Gil for shelf space. And she points out that he thinks this game that they're playing, he thinks like they're flirting. So he thinks that he's turning her on with this, like, just reading the transcript, you don't get that, but he is very sleazy about it. And she is very disgusted every moment. And we've seen Sophie, even when she's like working a job, kind of be charmed by the bad guy, or able to hide her disgust at the bad guy. And she is like barely keeping a lid on it in this one.
Well, I think a lot of it is that it's the whole, you know, like, I mean, I think part of it is that there are times where it is to her benefit to let the Mark think he is more charming than he is. And in this case, he's added a layer to it that she hadn't introduced. And so it's weird and unwelcome. And she is giving him all of the clear signs that it's unwelcome. And he is doubling down. So it's just, it's very. So yeah. I think she's a little, I mean, she's Sophie Devereaux. She's certainly handled stickier idiots than this, but I think she's sort of insulted that he isn't even pretending to care how she feels about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so what they've got to do now that they found out that they're not probably going to get this shelf space out from him, they talk about how most people are buying, you know, 2012, 52% of people are buying their holiday gifts on the internet, which is a lot higher these days. And so that now they have to up Baby Feels a Lot online appeal, which there's just so much that goes into this toy making. It's crazy. So we got to get pre-sales up. And then when the sales go through the roof, Hazlitt's going to want to buy in. So they're going to have to set up a meeting with him and the owner of Lucky Beans Toys, which is going to be Nate. And Hardison is like, he wants to have a word with Nate. And he says that he and Parker were talking and they're a little down about Christmas and how they're kind of feel like they're ruining the holiday. And Hardison, he's like, Hardison, Christmas was pre-ruined. You know how it began? And Sophie's like, no, shh, don't do it. Please stop. And Hardison's like, yeah, it was a bad guy in a chimney. And Nate is that guy who's like, you know, Christmas began as a pagan pre-Roman feast involving the sacrifice of children. Ho, ho, ho. And then he just walks away. Why? Why can nothing ever be happy with you? And our artisan's like, I mean, dang, I feel like I just got sucker punched by an elf-hating, Scrooge-loving, no-gift-giving anti-clause. I mean, am I bleeding? It's awful. Pantani shows up to talk to Hazlitt and tells him that the baby feels a lot, craze is not going away. And Hazlitt's like, what are you talking about? We killed it. And Pantani says, the toy's generating so much buzz that it's already ranked 5th on some chart for web pre-sales, which is ahead of Chubby Snubby. And it's 2 days max before it hits the top spot. Because for some reason, even though it hasn't hit a single store shelf yet, it's gone viral, which is crazy. So he's like, all right, I want to sit down with this baby feels a lot. Baby feels so hot woman. And so she has to deal with him again. This time, unfortunately, at a bar. And he's drinking. And she walks up and says, okay, so you took away my shelf space and now you want to buy me a drink. And he says, well, maybe I was wrong underestimating this toy. And says, like, I'm a sensible businessman. Let me meet the owner. You can be my back channel and then you and I can do business. And she says, you may what's in it for me? Like, you're going to make a move on this toy and then I'm out of a job. Like, why would I do that? And he tells her that he'll give her a 0.25 of the gross on the deal, which is apparently good compensation. I don't know what that means, but if it's like the most popular toy of this Christmas, that's a lot, right? Yeah. And she says, that's enticing, but I have to warn you, Earl Greipel, the owner of Lucky Beans, he's somewhat eccentric and very hostile to selling his company. And Hazlitt's like, most of these guys are freaking nuts. Was the owner of your tiny toy company nuts?
Not in the way that Nate is going to act in this, but I think, you know, I think it's like a lot of industries where, like, the kind of people who show up and decide I can compete with these giant conglomerates are kind of a blend of, like, fascinating and possibly a little manic and, you know, just like willing to take big risks, because otherwise you wouldn't, you know, decide to form a tiny company.
It's true.
Sure. And try and compete on the same playing field as these large companies with, you know, marketing and design teams and all of that.
Gotcha. Cool.
What is it? They later say that Poggio Toys has like an entire floor of thungineers.
Yeah. So yeah, they haggle over what she'll get for being the back channel. She wants 0.5 of the gross, a 21,000 finder's fee, and a VP position at Poggio. And he's like, you're good. You got a deal. And then he asks if she's available. And she pulls her hand away. And she's like, no, I'm married. And he's like, I didn't ask that. She's like, you're disgusting. And she doesn't say that. She looks at him like that, but then she says, let's stick to business for now. And he's like, for now. But after she's left. So they're Hardison and Parker are back in the van, and he admits, like, you know what, you're right. Like, this toy does have legs. And she's like, you doubted me like the rest of them. And he's like, no, I wouldn't do that. And then she's like, okay. And then she calls Lucky Bean Toys and pretends to be a fire chief and makes them evacuate for a gas leak. They said in the commentary that they were going to like film a scene where they evacuated the whole thing. And they're like, well, why don't we just have them call and that we don't have to film that at all. And then we get Nate holding Baby Feels Alive and acting real weird. And he says, you know, he's excited by the interest in his toy, but he didn't make it for money. He designed it for his son, Nestor, who's now in federal prison. It's just and then, like, just the random, like, it was a nasty episode involving horses and men from Tacoma. What is that? I don't even want to know. But he says that doctors attribute it to Nestor's difficulty growing up and having emotions, and frustration and anger issues. And you know, Hazlitt's like, yeah, I see. And I really love this beat where Sophie says something and then Nate repeats it word for word as if she has not said it. She's like, Mr. Greipel has often said that he wished that there had been a toy like Baby Feels a Lot during Nestor's developmental years. And then he says the exact same thing. Different times, he says. So he's like, you know, experts can look at all these things for toys, but what they really should do is they should look at the child inside themselves when making a toy. And Pantani's like, that's what we intend to do with Baby Feels a Lot. We have an excellent track record. You know, tries to go on, and Nate's like, yes, but I think you want to ship this toy off to China to become an emotional abomination. And, you know, Haz is like, you haven't heard my offer, but Nate turns it down and he like turns the angry head of the baby. And he's like, my answer is no. Because he's been holding the baby the whole time. So creepy.
It would be useful in negotiations to just like turn the Baby Feels on and be like, no, dislike. Or corporate meetings. I mean, I can really see a lot of applications for this.
Yeah, you just like put it up as you're in front of your Zoom and you just leave. You just turn your head whenever, however you're feeling. So outside in the hallway, or no, I guess it's, they're actually, I think they're in the parking garage and they're talking. And Hazlitt's like, you know, that guy doesn't want to sell. He just wants to like navel gaze for the next 10 years. And Sophie says, you know, if you make a fast, large offer before everything really goes nuts, I promise you that he'll bite. He's weird, but he's not stupid. And she's like, I know you corporate guys like to move slowly, but if Greipel gets hinky, then everything's all over and you're going to lose out. And he says, okay, well, give me a sample of a toy. I want to run a safety study on it. And she goes into like what he would do. She says, why don't we just fudge the safety numbers down the road if we need to? And he says, you know, we could be so great together. We think exactly the same. But he's like, I'll overnight an expedited study, my company's license. So whatever the results, call me tomorrow with Greipel's price. And so she walks off. And he's like, she gives him the doll. And he's like, I'll be as gentle as if I was holding her. And she's like, no. Don't. And she walks away. Then we see him at the risk management office and he's getting it expedited for, and he says, tell Wiggins it's for Trent Hazlitt and I want the 12-hour turnaround for Poggio. And we hear someone ask for the license and medallion for it. And he's like, it's all right in there. The next day, 12-hour turnaround. Sophie shows up and has a number ready for Hazlitt, but he's like, let me stop you there. I don't have any interest in it, in the doll or buying the doll or Greipel's company. And it turns out the only reason that he did the safety study was to get the toy specs, and they are going to release a knockoff that's going to undercut the Baby Feels Lot's price point by 40%. And he's going to mention Baby Happy Mad. Happy Mad. this afternoon when he does a press conference for Chubby Snubby. Chubby Snubby, the dog that we are trying to not get on the market. Please remember, everybody. And he's like, so thanks for the free buzz. And she is, you know, she's like, your knockoff will never replace. And I feel like she's getting very passionate on behalf of this terrifying toy. Which is both, which is the character, but also I think at this point we're like, no, we do feel strongly about our toy. Because Parker liked it. And, sorry. Yeah, so this is when he says that he's got three, not one floor, three floors of fungineers who are already amping up the happiness factor on the doll. And
which seems unnecessary, honestly. I mean, the toy is half happy, right? Like, it's not.
I always feel like, I always feel like the not angry half of the face is not really emoting anything. It's just kind of like a
okay, that's true.
Neutral, but maybe it is happy. And I was just so distracted by the angry side that I can't remember what the other one looks like. So, but he's like, yeah, don't worry about it. Just come help me celebrate. And she's like, you are a, and he's like, the male version of you. And come on, who doesn't dream of dating themselves?
Yeah, I mean, he's really built this incredible fantasy life for himself. Because I really, like, I get why he thinks he and Sophie are, you know, simpatico in some ways. But I also cannot imagine a scenario where if she had screwed him over to this extent, that he'd be like, that's great. We should definitely celebrate your success.
Yeah. Oh, 100% not. No. Oh no. He would have gone nuclear.
Right. So like, I'm not surprised that he tried, but I'm also like, I don't really know why you thought this was going to work out the way you want it to work out.
Exactly. Yeah. It only works out because he thinks he's winning. So then I guess it's later in the day, he's standing backstage, like off to this in the wings of the expo floor stage, kind of muttering the beginning of his speech for his press conference about Chubby Snubby, and Pantani shows up and he's like, oh, can you feel the energy out there? This is going to be big. And he's like, it's not about the energy out there. It's about the energy in here. This is about Trent Hazlitt. All right, get the fuck over yourself, man. And Pantani, who's in love with his boss, says, right, go out there and give them a big old bag of Trent. So he just goes, shut up. Which, fair. And he walks out and there are tons of reporters and they kind of swarm him and they're like, there he is, Mr. Hazlitt. And he says he's going to take questions after the launch celebration. And they're like, so you're treating this Chubby Snubby toy recall as a celebration? And that takes him completely by surprise. And they said, you know, surely there'll be a recall after the government released the failed safety study this morning. And he's like, what government? And he covers up the microphone. He's like, I never submitted any study to the government. And we see a flashback to him at the risk management office giving the orders to have the safety study expedited and, you know, all the info to whoever it was. And that person was hidden like behind a lamp. And then as he leaves, we see the man lean forward and it's Hardison. And we're like, oh, okay. And we get a further flashback to Eldon at the beginning talking about who can actually regulate this stuff. And it's the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. if they find something, they have to make it public. So then we see a different flashback, and Hardison is taking the chubby snubby wubby derby to the safety commission, asking for an expedited safety inspection, and he's got all the info right there because Hazlitt turned it over to him. And he, like, I like this receptionist. She's very normal white lady. She's a little nose ring. She's a little cool. Pretty cool for a government agency, I think. And Hardison, like, winks at her and he leaves. And as he's walking out, there's a man who, like, goes over to, like, a water cooler, and he, like, looks over his shoulder, and it's a very strange moment. But that's Jonathan Frakes.
Oh.
He wanted a little cameo. He was not content to, like, be the voice of a stuffed dinosaur. So there he is. And then we get another flashback to Elliot meeting Allie, the Chardonnay mommy blogger, in the park. And he has the safety study that has come back. And he's like, this, I find it very alarming. Like, we should get this out there and let parents know about it. Do you think you could help me? And she's like, oh, she's just really upset that children could die because of this nose that swells up to the size of a pomegranate. And she says, you know, I'm about to put out the bat signal. The mommy's got this. And he's like, thank you so much. And then back to the future or the present. And Hazlitt's like, what's going on? And all the reporters are trying to get him to, you know, be like, what's your comment? And Gil shows up and he's like, I'm going to sue your ass. And he walks off. And Hazlitt's just like, who did this to me? Like, not like, how did this happen, but who did this to me? And we see he has amazing vision, because, like, way through the crowd, past the lobby, at the doors of the Expo Center, is Sophie standing with Nate. And Sophie, like, puts her hand up and she points at her ring finger, and then she, like, points at Nate to be like, yes, this is who I'm married to. And they leave, and he's like, ah. So we got the gloat. Very important to have the gloat. And back at the brew pub, Eldon is so thankful. He's like, I can't believe you did it. I wish there were more people like you out there. And he's like, you know, you did it, Mr. Maris. Without you, Hazlitt would still be around. And he's like, I was just doing my job. And Sophie gives him a card and tells him that, because he's out of a job, right? So she gives him a card and says, the chief examiner is looking for a new analyst for the Consumer Product Safety Commission. So he's going to go work there and keep toys safe. That's really good. Yeah, Nate's like, when he found out he could hire the guy that took down Hazlitt, he jumped at it. Merry Christmas. Elliot, they're at the bar, and Elliot says, please tell me those toys will never hit the shelves. Oh, baby, it feels a lot. This is my favorite part of the episode, because Parker says, I'm keeping them all to myself. I've got them lined up in my warehouse like an army of joy and rage. And Hardison's like, you don't ever want to be in that warehouse alone, ever.
Yes, which sounds like the voice of a very unfortunate experience.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And then
it has turned into the perfect Christmas. Parker got all the dolls.
There you go. She got all the presents. That's priceless, honestly. And Sophie, like, brings it back to our present conversation from earlier in the episode, where, you know, she says she's sad that they're cynical about gifts. She's like, I used to love Christmas as a child. And Elliot's like, well, nothing's genuine anymore. because he's got to be that guy too. And so he's like, that's not true. I've been thinking about this. And you know what's genuine? Trust. And so she's like, I think we should give each other some trust for Christmas. As if 5 years of doing this job that we do together hasn't like wildly changed us all as people and like made us like people who work, you know, only by themselves has made like, as if we don't already trust each other, but you know. And Parker's like, what, like that exercise where you fall back and someone catches you? And so he's like, no. And she's like, good, because I did that once and I dropped the person and they had to get stitches. And Hardison says, still hurts. And Parker's like actually remorseful. She's like, I know. Parker's so good. And you know, so he's like, I just think that, you know, we've been through so much together. We should each give each other something personal this year, like a story or a secret. And everyone's like, I don't know. And Elliot like looks at his watch or looks at his wrist like he's checking a watch. And
Elliot already had to have like 3 months of fake feelings. He can't take more.
He didn't write a single one of those feelings.
That's true. But he had to pretend like he felt them.
Yeah. That's true. And, you know, Sophie's like, okay, who's going to go first? And Parker's like, Elliot. But Nate pipes up and he tells like a really sad story about when he was a kid. 1 year he wanted a trumpet for Christmas because he was inspired by the Frank Sinatra records that his dad would play. And the trumpet player, Sweets Edison, who played for him. But that year for Christmas, all he got was a pack of baseball cards. But a few weeks later, a trumpet showed up at the foot of his bed, and it was like all beat up and stuff. Because he's like, my dad probably shook someone down for it, or probably rolled someone for it. But he loved this trumpet, and he played it every day for 10 years. And you know, he was never as good as Sweets Edison, but you know, so. Then he says he gave it to Sam on his 8th birthday and he was supposed to have his, I'm going to start crying. he was supposed to have his first trumpet lesson the day that he went into the hospital. So he's like, I don't have a lot left from my childhood or anything left from my childhood, but I did keep the trumpet and he keeps it on the boat. And it's like, as he's telling the story, it flips, you know, perspective on each of the characters and their reactions to him. And they were saying in the commentary when they were filming this, the actors never knew when their scene, like when it would, the camera would turn on them. So they had to like be acting the whole time. So they're just like reacting in real time. And I was like, I would be bawling probably. Actually, when I watched it, I was just like, oh, that's sad. But just now, I got real choked up trying to talk about it. But yeah, so he, you know, he says, I keep it on the boat. And then he's like, okay, who's next? And then it fades to black. I'm like, Parker already shared some personal stuff this episode. And I think Hardison did.
Yeah, too. I mean, I also feel like that's kind of the challenge with stuff like that is that, well, Nate's going to tell a story about his dead kid who nobody wants to go after.
Right? You can't one-up that. Yeah, no. I think the only thing Sophie could have shared is her real name.
Well, and I did wonder if that was maybe where she was trying to go.
Yeah. Could be.
Like, should've okay, been. Maybe as your Christmas present, I'll tell you.
Because Nate's the only one who doesn't know.
Right.
Mm-mm-mm. And that's the end of the toy job. Do you have any other thoughts on it?
No, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, there's not a lot of trivia out there that I saw. Like, extra things. I didn't even, not even that much in the commentary kind of came up that I can think of. It's a good episode. And I honestly, like, there was some point in like season four where I was like, where's the episode where Elliot's a mommy blogger? And I forgot. And then when we were, I knew that I was going to do the toy job with you. And I was like, I honestly don't remember what the toy job is. And usually, you know, I've talked about this before, my, even though I've seen Leverage like three or four times all the way through, I'll be like, oh, I don't remember this episode. And it'll come on. I'll be like, oh yeah, 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 yeah. This one, I didn't remember anything about. I like forgot about, I like the scene, just the scene of Elliot, like in the park talking to the moms, like that I remembered, but like everything else, I was experiencing it all for the first time. So.
Well, and it's also fascinating just because like in the short number of years that Leverage was on, you know, that we've gone from like, you know, like they could break into a high school reunion and just by swapping some name tags and be done with it, to like now Hardison has had to create 3 months of backlogs to like build up enough cred so that they can make this story go viral. Which is, yeah, you know, interesting.
They're so good at their jobs. They're just so good. Elliot didn't get to beat anybody up.
He did not.
Did he beat anybody up in the last episode?
Maybe that was his Christmas present. You know, he got to take a little rest.
Aww.
Explore his feelings with baby feels.
Oh, I was like, did he beat anybody up on the last one? Is the corkscrew job? He did get to beat somebody up while he was about to pass out from lack of oxygen. Yes, he did get to fight. It is, yeah, it is nice to have a little rest. And he deserves a little rest. And he got, I feel like he got a damn Hardison in there. And, you know, it's good to go. All right. Oh my gosh. Do you have High Slate?
So I do. I was looking at toy heists.
Ooh.
And there are a few, but Mental Floss had a recap of like 7 toy heists, and I'm not going to go through all 7. But one of them, this guy had a bunch of like super rare Barbies, and somebody wanted to steal his collection, so they waited till he was at, they knew he was out of the house, broke into his house, stole the Barbies, and then tried to burn the house down to cover their tracks. And they figured out the motive because there weren't any like melted Barbies in the rubble from the fire.
So if they had brought some brand new Barbies,
right, they should have
melted them, they never would have known.
Yeah, I guess they assumed that somehow like the house fire would be hot enough, but obviously they did not.
Plus, it's not going anywhere. Come on.
Right. Like, I was like, they didn't know enough about Barbie structure to know that Barbie would, that the fire would have to burn for a very long time for there to not be any evidence of Barbie left.
They stole his, did he get his Barbies back, I guess?
Oh, you know, that's an interesting question, and I don't remember the answer to that.
Because I'm like, this man lost everything. Can he sell his Barbies to
buy? Did he at least get his rare Barbie back?
Yeah, I guess he probably had insurance on his house. And I was like, can he sell the Barbies to buy a new house?
They did recover the dolls.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he had over 200 rare types, including prized Ken and Skipper dolls.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Love Skipper. Do you have any midges?
It does not mention there being any midges, but sorry, now I scrolled through to the article about them.
It's okay.
Find them to see if it mentioned the midges, but it did not.
And I was just like, you know, I don't need to know. Or I do, but we'll post the link below so you can read more about other toy heists. I love it. I don't have a huge heist light because we have leverage news that we can talk about. But when Shannon Schroeder was on a few episodes back, we were talking about the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum heist. And like literally the next day, a documentary about it dropped on Netflix. So I can't think of the name of it now. Let me look it up really quick. Yes. Okay. So the documentary is called This Is a Robbery. And it's all about that robbery. Because we talked about the podcast that I had found recently. If you want a more visual medium so you can really see the art and the how everything happened should go. I have not watched it yet, but it looks really cool. Okay, but more importantly, the last couple episodes, we haven't really had much leverage news because they wrapped filming. And so there was kind of a lull and we still didn't know a release date or anything like that. But as of yesterday, today we're recording on Tuesday. As of Monday, we know a release date, July 9th. It's a Friday. I just looked it up. And there is a trailer for Leverage Redemption. And y'all, it looks good.
It really does. It's very exciting.
It feels the same. The premise here is that the trio have still been working. Things have been getting worse, and now they're trying to pull. Well, I guess they've still been working. I don't know. We'll really find that out. But they're pulling Sophie back in, and she's apparently been clean. Like, she's been out of the life since the series ended. And she's like, I can't. And they're, like, trying to get her back in. And we also see a little clip of Noah Wiley showing up. And at the beginning, there's like he's broken into an art museum and he's like looking at art, but he finds them and he's like, I've deduced that you do, you know, crimes to help people or take down the bad guys. And I want to be your inside man. I'm like, ooh, what did they call him in the trailer? Hold on, I'm just going to pull it up. Also, he looks really good. Like, everybody looks a little older than you're used to, except for Hardison looks amazing, but he's a baby. And Sophie looks amazing. Everyone looks really good. But it's all, you know, hitter, hacker, grifter, thief. And
Hardison's sister is a maker.
Yes. Inside man. Oh, he's the fixer. So we don't have a mastermind anymore. We have a fixer and a maker. Sad. Which I like. I like that a lot. And let's see. So that looks really cool. There are also some episode descriptions up.
No, I didn't look at those.
Somebody sent me a few like screenshots of them. I don't know if they're actually, let me check if they're up on IMDb too. Gotta be looking on IMDb to get the stats up too. Episodes. That's longer than a regular season has been, really. Okay, so they're not on IMDb, so I don't know where these screenshots are from that somebody sent me. But episode one is going to be the Too Many Rembrandts job. When the team comes together to help Sophie, they intercept guilt-ridden corporate fixer Harry and decide to help him take down an evil billionaire making money on the back of an opioid crisis, which is super topical since all of the case, that one big court case from West Virginia about the opioid. Oh, I can't say it. Opioids.
Well, and also, I don't know if they plan to tie it together, but there are a lot of art galleries named after the Sackler family. So that seems like an actually very natural combination of things.
Nice. Then episode two is the Panamanian. I can't do words right now. Panamanian monkey's job. When a new team member on, with a new team member on board, plus the arrival of Hardison's genius foster sister. So it looks like she's not showing up until the second episode. The team heads to Panama to pull an elaborate heist before an evil billionaire can get his money and flee to a non-extradition country. Nice. So we're traveling already in the second episode. Episode three, the Roland on the River job. The leverage team takes on a greedy riverboat casino owner before he can bulldoze the homes of longtime New Orleans natives for his planned expansion. I'm excited to see their reasons for being based in New Orleans. Episode four, the tower job. One member of the team seeks redemption and justice by convincing Leverage to con a developer out of an entire luxury apartment building. I wonder who. Episode five, which says five on here, but on IMDb, it's the 10th episode, is the paranormal activity job. When a woman believes she is being haunted and runs from her home in terror, Sophie leads Brianna and Parker through a con to convince the two real estate scammers responsible to target Leverage HQ. Lots of real estate scammers.
Well, I mean, in New Orleans, that also makes a lot of sense.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Episode six, the card game job. The Leverage team dives into the world of high fantasy collectible card game with a devoted following to take down a pharmaceutical bad boy who is price gouging drugs to fund his own house of cards. That sounds like a Martin Shkreli kind of situation. Episode seven, the double-edged sword job. The team takes on a brilliant software developer who is selling a groundbreaking facial recognition system that threatens everyone's privacy except his own. That's too real. And episode eight, the mastermind job. Sophie must keep her feelings in check when she discovers that someone has written a memoir of the team, casting himself as Nate, which leads an exiled criminal to kidnap Harry and fake Nate, forcing the Leverage team to pull a heist. What?
Oh my gosh.
That sounds wild.
That is wild.
Huh. And that's just like a couple of them, like what, that was like eight of the 17. So those sound really good. And we haven't really, I mean, we know some of the guest stars just from people's social media and some news articles, but I'm excited to see who all the bad guys are and if they'll be like big names like the ones that we've already dropped, or if they'll just be like, oh, that guy's. Should be good. This is only 2 months away.
No, it's so exciting.
I'm not going to have time to do any of my filler episodes I was planning.
Well, I mean, it's probably fine for you to actually sleep or something.
I mean, I guess. Well, so I wonder if they're going to pull, like, because it's on a streaming service, if they're all going to be dropped at the same time or if they're going to come out one at a time.
Yeah, I don't know what IMDb TV's methodology is for that normally.
Yeah. Yeah, it says it. Well, Dean Devlin says it debuts on July 9th. But yeah, I don't know. So we'll see. So I don't know. People are just going to have to be patient. If it all comes out at one time, I'm not going to be able to just bang them out. We'll still probably stick to the 2-week schedule because that's much more doable.
Well,
it'll be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and I say this as someone who's been binging more than I usually do. I think for new to you stuff, it's often really useful to have time to process each episode. Which isn't to say when they did that season of Veronica Mars that I didn't like stay up until 2 a.m.
Yeah.
The first half of it and then just wake up and power through so I could safely return to the internet.
Yeah. Well, but you weren't going to go on a podcast and try to talk about it coherently.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of it, too, is that, like, I did all of that, so, and then I, like, went back and watched them at a much more reasonable pace so I could actually, you know, process some of that.
Yeah, I think that's probably what'll end up happening for me. I'll probably, like, binge all of them, maybe. I don't know. Like, I can see myself binging all of them and then going back and, like, rewatching. Because, you know, I watched Leverage several times before I was like, yeah, I'm going to do a podcast about
this. Well, and 17 is a lot to binge. I mean, I say this as a baby binger. You know, I'm not very good at it. So I know other people do that. But that's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Or maybe I'll want to, like, savor them and just... you know, wait, but I also don't want to be spoiled for anything. But if I watch them as I release podcast episodes, then I won't spoil it for anybody else either. Maybe that's what I'll do. We'll see. We'll see what happens when, like, the episode ends and starts. The next one's, like, countdown starts. We'll see how I feel. Yeah, that'll be good. Well, Tara, thank you for joining me. This was great. Will you tell people where they can find you on the internet? And if there's anything you want to plug?
You can always find me on Twitter. I'm at Tara, T-L-K there, and there's links to everything else. Twitter bio and stuff, too. But yeah.
All right. Awesome. And as usual, I'm at LibrarianSti on Twitter and just about everywhere else. You won't see us again, but you'll hear us again in 2 weeks. We'll be talking the very last episode of the original series of Leverage with Robin. She'll be back for that last episode. And then I'm going to have to, like, add the new episodes to the spreadsheet and see who wants to come on and talk about them. It's so exciting.
That is so exciting.
I can't believe it's happening. But yeah, so it'll be the long goodbye job, but not actually a long goodbye.
Well, that's what makes the goodbye long, I guess.
Exactly. Awesome. Tara, thank you so much for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Sophie leads Brianna and Parker through a... Did you see that?
I did.
Ow! She scratched me on her way up. Oh, I'm gonna have to go back and watch that video. Oh my god. So there was, like, Charlie is terrified of fabric, like, socks on the ground. She's terrified. So there's, like some laundry, and it was just sitting over here. And I guess she caught it, and she just levitated. She scratched my hand and my leg. Ow. Oh my God. Okay. Let's start that over.